Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. I'm really excited about our guest today. Got to see him live at Scale Up Conference in Anaheim, California last month, and his message, his story just resonated in a big way. He had the audience captivated, myself included. And his bio, San Francisco-based Alden Mills, began taking control of his life at age 12. Doctor told him to learn chess because his asthma would keep him from playing sports. His first goal was to conquer the asthma, and then he went on to achieve extraordinary things. I'm going to let him tell you some of those, but in sports, academics, military service, Olympic festival, he was a gold medalist, captain and freshman of varsity teams at the U.S. Naval Academy, a Navy SEAL, led his platoon through multiple missions. He ended up founding Perfect Fitness and led it to grow over 12,000, that is not a typo, 12,000% annual sales of $90 million and Inc. magazine recognition as the fastest growing consumer product in America in just 3 years. He's developed 40 patents, including the Perfect Push-Up, Perfect Pull-Up, Perfect Sit-Up, Perfect Ab Carver, and more. And his books are Be Unstoppable, The 8 Essential Actions to Succeed at Anything, and Unstoppable Teams, which I'm holding a segment of that right here, The 4 Essential Actions of High Performance Leadership. You've seen him on shows such as ABC's Dateline or Nightline, CBS This Morning, The Big Idea with Donny Douche, and more. There's so much more, but I want to get to our conversation. So, Alden, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Derek, it's an honor to be here, and I love what you're doing.
Hey, thank you so much. I want to hear, we always like our listeners, many of them are familiar with you, but take us back, tell us about you as a person and just kind of give us some highlights of your journey. And then I want to make sure we have time to talk about these unstoppable teams because I just find this fascinating.
Well, I can take you back as far as that kind of first transformational moment with my mom in a doctor's office that was told that I was born with a smaller set of lungs and that I needed to lead a less active lifestyle. And it was mom in those early days with her sharp fingernails that would dig into my arm who would just remind me day in, day out, nobody defines what you can do but you. Do you hear me? Of course, you know, I didn't hear it the first time or the second, but when somebody continually whispers that positive energy into your ear again and again and again, you know, it encouraged me to go try some other sports. Sports where I really wasn't that good at them. She would say, you know, so what if you scored against your own team in basketball? Go try another sport. You know, mom was a perpetual optimist, but I bring that point up because that was really the pebble in the pond that, you know, convinced me to have the confidence to keep trying to find something, which ended up being rowing. I was pretty good at sitting on my butt going backwards for long periods of time. But rowing took me to the Naval Academy. Eventually, it took me to SEAL Team. And then from SEAL Team, you know, another series of events occurred. In much the same way that you and I were talking about leadership, I started realizing, you know, I may not have been like the world's greatest shooter or the world's greatest diver, but I was pretty good at leading teams. And when I came out to be a civilian after business school, that was the first thing that I really had a front sight focus on was, okay, where can I get some increased leadership responsibility? And at first I started off working in a software startup in San Francisco. I mean, I moved out here with my wife and my dog because we were like, hey, let's go live in a place we never, you know, neither of us had lived in. And so we kind of threw a dart on a board and landed up in San Francisco. And then I realized that, you know, it's really hard to lead a team if there are other people that aren't really intentional or don't care about leading. And I left. I was really disenfranchised. I thought I'd go back into the military. And at the 11th hour, it was my wife this time that started whispering, hey, you know, you've always said you want to start a business. Why don't you try? And eventually that led me down the path to going into fitness. And the mindset was, all right, why not work in something that's going to be a part of my life, regardless if I work in it or not? Fitness had been a transformational element of my life because it helped me overcome the asthma, or certainly put it in check. And I was like, you know, I like that. I can work in a group, in an industry that could also have a higher meaning in helping others. That was something, by the way, I really struggled with coming out of the military. The military, it's pretty clear the meaning and the mission. Coming in as a civilian, things got flipped around on me, and things were more focused on how much money can you make? What things can you get? And in the military, you know, pay was published every 2 weeks. Everybody knew what you made. Money was not even a conversation of interest.
Wow.
Except, hey, you know, where's the party this weekend? You know, who's buying the beer? it was a much more focus on family and community in the military. And then when you came out as a civilian, I just remember going, whoa, there's a lot of selfishness out here.
Wow.
And that, you know, and then I had the overnight success that took me 10 years plus with Perfect Fitness. I ended up selling that company, working for a larger corporation for 3.5 years. And then we sold it again. And then I moved my family to Spain for 2 years to do a sabbatical and wrote my second book, Unstoppable Teams.
Thanks for sharing that. If you don't mind, I want to go back a little bit for a few minutes.
Sure.
You obviously have such a strong mindset to be a Navy SEAL. And I enjoyed at the conference last month hearing you share some specific stories of so you want to be a frogman and some of your specific missions, just really incredible. But you talk about your mom and the fingernails and not feeling sorry for yourself and getting out there. What other things happen? Because, you know, some people have someone tough in their life or a motivator, but there's something within you. There's a grit. There's something that led you to not only just take and have an active life, but have an extremely active life. I mean, being a Navy SEAL is not something handed to you in any way, shape or form. So what are some other principles or mindsets that stand out to you in those early years that helped you to take action the way that you have?
One of the clear things, and by the way, just for the audiences to understand, I was not this kid that grew up with Navy SEAL pictures on my walls, right? I was not the kid that wore cami to school every day or fatigues, right? Did I think guns were cool? Sure. I mean, all kids think guns are cool, right? The power projection of something is
sure.
Great. But what the other key thing was at an early age, and I can credit my mom, I can credit my great grandfather who taught me how to shoot a gun in his basement. And here's a guy who had a crippled left arm that went on to create his own businesses. But they would all say, you know, what if it works out? What if whatever you were trying to do actually came true? How would that make you feel? And then realizing that the only difference between me and somebody else is the willingness to focus on something so intently that they're all in all the time, that they're so determined that after a while you start to realize your only true limitations are your imagination and your determination.
Great advice. All in all the time. I appreciate that. If you don't mind, take us to, and then I want to talk about some concepts in the book, but you talk about the perfect push-up and you talk about that brand. And, you know, I enjoyed hearing you talk about how that brand took off and how at first, you know, there was some challenges. Do you mind sharing a few of those challenges and the mindset of you getting past that to create one of the most successful brands in the space?
Well, the first thing is, I wasn't interested in perfect push-up at all. I was interested in creating the world's greatest fat-burning device, this complicated rotating weight system that was handheld. It was new to its category. We'd link it up with game controllers and video games, and we had all these wonderful ideas for it, and I had raised $1.5 million from 37 of my closest friends and family. Only to learn $1,475,000 worth of ways not to launch a product. Right? And sure. I was stubborn enough not to think about pivoting right away. Like, no, 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 we don't quit. We don't quit. Of course, you know, you don't have to quit, but you can change directions so you don't run out of cash. Or, you know, I also, many times I talk of this like being in a small boat and running out of fuel when you're out at sea. And I was there. I was at this point where I was pretty much floating adrift. I had not enough money to pay the accountants, the lawyers, the manufacturers. I had a small group of investors saying, it's over. You're going bankrupt. Go bankrupt. Get this over with. Flush it and start over. And oh, by the way, you're embarrassing yourself. I'm like, oh, thanks. You had to throw that one in on me too? And at that point, I had realized something very important about bringing a product to market. And that is, if you can't describe it in a sentence and it takes longer than that, people aren't going to get it. And the story was too convoluted. It was too complicated. It required so much more education than I had originally anticipated. And I won't go into all the details, but I call this the three eyes of an idea. And what I had inadvertently done is I had created an invention. An invention has no reference point. So you have to spend an inordinate amount of time educating people, like the Segway. The Segway is an invention. And worse, when you see the Segway, you're like, oh my God, that thing shouldn't even work, right? It's terrifying. And what I really needed to do was work on the second eye of an idea, which is an innovation, which in this case, pun intended, is there is a reference point, but there's a twist to it. In my case, the twist was a rotation of a perfect push-up handle. By the way, the third idea is called an improvement. I often talk to entrepreneurs who are looking to bring widgets, products to market, and ask them to make sure they really understand the three eyes of their idea. So it was during that time period that we became really focused on a very simple story. And the story was Navy SEAL invents perfect push-up, rotates like a punch, easier on the joints, engages less, more muscles. And that's it. Right? So I told you why it does what it does, the benefits to what it does, and the credibility behind the product, a Navy SEAL. And that changed the game for us. Of course, it only took me 5 years to figure that out.
So, and thank you. That's great advice. I love it. And it seems, it makes so much sense. I could see people listening going, yeah, of course. But when you're in the middle of it, and you,
oh my
you
God,
see it if you have
blind.
Enough fuel in the ocean. So that's another question I have, because, you know, last year I waited 2 years longer. Some consultants of ours were saying you're going to have to make a pivot soon. I waited 2 years longer. And then January of 2018, we were forced to make a pivot, a massive one in our company after 10 years. And we did it. It was painful. We got through it and we grew, but I didn't know when. And so another question I have for you is there any, when do you pivot? Is it when you're, before you run out of fuel? What are there any other signs that you want to have your clear eyes? You want a simple story. I get that. But are there any other things that are obvious of going, hey, I'm not sure if I'm selling the best thing to the best people right now or building the best thing for the best people. What do I, is there anything else I can look for to know if I need to pivot soon?
That's a very good question, Derek. And in my reflection, and let me be very clear about that term. You do not learn from experience. You learn from reflection of your experiences.
Right.
There are plenty of people who live out the definition of insanity of continually doing the same thing again and again and again and expecting a different result. Right? It's until you reflect on that experience that you can really learn from it. And what I have looked at is there were a series of red flags out there from trusted advisors, from key customers saying, Alden, you know, this is nice, but it's a nice to have. It's not a must have. And I'm talking about my first product. And I remember how much effort it took to push and push and push. And then all of a sudden the perfect push-up came along and I got pulled. Right?
Wow.
And there is this point where you have to start to realize there is a flow state here to bringing a product to market. And many times, if you know who your customer is, and that is a really important element, and having trusted advisors that have your best interests in mind. Now, this can be very hard because if your trusted advisor isn't as creative as you, isn't as entrepreneurial as you, but your trusted advisor is someone who's very corporate and, you know, goes by the book, that's probably not going to be a helpful point of feedback for you. Because they won't be able to look around the corner like you can, because that's what an entrepreneur does on a daily basis. But if you can find yourself those key experts that can straddle that fence to give you that feedback and have what I call a mastermind group that you meet monthly to say, all right, this is what I'm getting, here's my feedback, and they can give you unbiased opinions of things to try, and you know that they have your best intention, that would have been something that would have helped me make a decision a lot earlier.
Great advice. And Alan, thank you so much. I this is why I love doing this show, is to learn from things like this you're sharing. How invaluable. Thank you again. I want to ask you about the whisper and the whiner.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about those? That really resonated with me, with quite a few of us in the group hearing that. Can you talk about that for just a minute?
So what Derek is referring to is a specific story that we were told, and I say we, that were the candidates of class 181. And I use a Southern accent because this gentleman had a deep Southern accent. And he was the lead instructor of the first phase of Navy SEAL training. And he gave us a conversation right before we took our final physical training test to class up and officially start SEAL training. And at the end of the day, what he does is he says, "Do you know what my job is?" And he takes his finger and he points to his head and he says, "My job is to create a conversation between here," his head, and then he moves it down over his heart, "and here, a conversation that's going to drive you to make a decision." And he points to a brass bell and he says, "To either ring the bell," that means to quit, "or to stand on this here platform," and he's talking about a graduation platform, "9 months from now." And I use that story often, not all the time, but I use it a lot with entrepreneurs and many times with up-and-coming leaders, folks that have just taken over new divisions, new units, mid-level managers, all the way up to senior leaders, because at the end of the day, one of the most critical things you can do as a leader is to teach people what to focus on and how to lead the conversation. You see, the conversation that he's talking about is what I call, and we talk an entire chapter about it in the book, between the whiner, and I'm pointing to my head right now, and the whisperer, and that would be your heart. Another way of looking at it, this mental and emotional conflict that constantly goes on inside of us. The whiner knows what it knows. It loves looking in the rearview mirror. It loves questioning, why should I get out of the comfort zone, right? But the whiner talks with a more, in my mind, it talks with a higher pitch. "Do you know how hard this is going to be? Who do you know's done this? What are you doing? You know, this is not going to make enough money, or this isn't going to be this or that or blah, 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 blah," right? Constantly looking for reasons to keep you in the comfort zone. Now, you can't really fault the whiner. You see, the whiner, we are all born with a whiner. That's called our survival trait. And the whiner is just trying to help us survive. Now, it's a 3 million year plus trait that we all have. But then the whisperer is much quieter. The whisperer will say, "Get up, try again. You can do this." But it's very hard to hear the whisperer. Now, in case in point, you know, Mom was being a whisperer with a kind of wailing mechanism with those sharp fingernails on me. But She was really trying to get me to lead that conversation early on and shift my focus. It is so easy to focus on the negative. There is something called a negativity bias out there, and we're all naturally afflicted with it because negativity helps keep us safe. So negativity actually has a higher value of focus inside of us than a positive. And I actually call that as an example, I call it the Amazon five-star effect. If anybody's ever sold a product on Amazon, they know how critical those first reviews are. Because if you get one-star review, you need five-star reviews to bring your rating on average up above a 4.0. The same process of the whiner and the whisperer is quite true. In this case, think of it as you start talking negatively to yourself. You're going to need somewhere between 3 and 5 positive affirmations to help offset that negative voice or the whiner. Now, first step is leading yourself in that conversation. Second step as a leader is knowing and being aware of that conversation exists in everybody you work with. If you're constantly spewing the negative, constantly looking to critique versus compliment, then over time, the focus shifts to let's play not to lose instead of figuring out how to crush it.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Thank you so much. Wow. I want to talk, you're sharing principles from your book here, but let's talk macro level, unstoppable teams, 4 essential actions of high performance leadership. You talk about these lessons that they're not just for Navy SEALs. You make the case for why they're so important. Can you talk to us for a couple minutes about some key concepts from the book?
Building teams is all about building relationships. That's the core of this. And you will never be a good team leader or leader if you don't first understand the human dynamics of a relationship. At the very essence of being a leader, and the kinds of leaders that I'm talking about are transformational ones. The whole idea behind transformational leadership, which is building an unstoppable team that takes you to a 10x multiplier versus just a group of individuals, is that you are helping change people's belief system. We all have different belief systems. But at the end of the day, what a leader does is give people a reason to believe and get them to push themselves beyond what they originally thought was possible. The essence of that, the essence of building out the trust required to take something beyond what you originally thought you were capable of, comes back to the most powerful human emotion, care. Now you may say, well, wait a minute, that's not the most powerful, it's love. Care is the baseline for love. And when people know that you care so much about them, they no longer worry about their rearview mirror, about their own backs. They start daring and taking steps forward beyond what they originally thought was possible. So the whole baseline of this book is what I call CARE, in particular, the CARE loop, which stands for connect, achieve, respect, and empower. And it's the 4 elements that are required to show people how much you truly care about them, to move them from a state of an individual with selfish drivers to a team of selfless participants.
Wow. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that. And transformational leaders, 10 times multipliers, that's what we're looking for, obviously. But how does a leader who says, you know, that sounds great, how do I get out of my own way? The first step is to do what? To care?
The first step is to make sure you're leading yourself. You know, the book is set up as what I call the 3 lines of leadership. And think of it like a pebble in a pond with a series of concentric circles. The smallest one, which is the most powerful one, is the first line, leading yourself. The second one is leading your directs. Those would be your direct reports. And the third one, which is the largest influencer, is leading your indirects, your customers, your contributors, like suppliers and vendors, to the communities in which you operate in. But all of them are just mere reflections of how you lead yourself. So if you don't truly believe that, let's say you have asthma and that you can't really work out and you just have to play chess for the rest of your life, then how are you going to get other people to go out there and work out or be something beyond just a chess player? Very difficult. They're not going to really buy into it from you. But if your mindset is one of, hey, yeah, I know, we got that, we'll keep that in check, but let's go out there and figure out a way that we can really excel. And when you do that, that's the first step in the magic of helping become a transformational leader.
That's a powerful and scary, a challenging statement. All are mere reflections of how you lead yourself. Powerful. Alden, would you have just another minute left? I want to talk about you and then talk about where we can find your book. But tell me, for you, of all these things you've accomplished, and I've had fun learning from you, from reading part of your book, and then also from getting to hear you speak. And I thought to myself, what is your proudest personal or professional moment? Like, if you could pick one, it could be a small moment, a big moment. What stands out to you top of mind of something that you're most proud of as an accomplishment?
Being a father of four boys and watching them overcome. That's it. Wow. Without question. You know, there are all different types of leadership opportunities. The first one is leading ourselves. I think the single most important one after leading ourselves is leading our family. And then there's the professional leadership, of course, and then there's the leadership within our community. Those four quadrants are all critical to how we can make a positive impact in our spheres of influence. And we need more leaders than ever before in today's world. In a world of such high levels of connectivity, think social networks, but low levels of human connection, more and more we need people that know how to connect at a human level, not an electronic level.
Alden, thank you so much for being our guest today. Any final thoughts that you want to share with us?
Yes. At the end of the day, leadership is messy. You will make all kinds of mistakes. And that's okay, so long as everybody knows you are leading with your heart, that you are all in all the time, giving it all you have, and being open to hearing different points of view so you can become better. Stay curious and stay focused on giving it all you got all the time.
Great way to close the segment. Thank you again, Alden. I look forward to watching the next great things you're doing. Your book, Unstoppable Teams, The Four Essential Actions of High Performance Leadership. Our listeners can find that in stores near them and, or I believe probably on Amazon, correct?
Correct.
And then also Alden, ALDEN-Mills.com. Alden, can't wait to see the next things you're doing. And thank you for sharing your story and your lessons with others so that we can grow.
Derek, thank you, and keep inspiring others.
Hey, take care.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.